Welcome back to episode number 89 of the MP Dude. This is Jeff, the MP Dude, giving nurse practitioners a voice. That's all of our voices, guys, so keep those comments, questions, and concerns coming to me. I do appreciate it. I did get a bunch of them last week. I was on vacation, so that's why you haven't heard anything in a while. I got to break away, and I know I told people in my last episode that I was going, but if you haven't listened to my last previous episode, number 88, I went to Disney. My wife and I took the kids to Disney, and if you ever go to Disney, if you've never been to Disney, let's start it that way, and you think you're going to get rest and relaxation when you go to Disney, you will be sorely misunderstood. I am so exhausted, and I just got back last night. I'm heading to the office early in the morning again, so I haven't had much time to do much else other than Disney stuff for the last 8 days, so it was fun. Got to spend some time with the kids, got to yell at them a lot, quit touching crap, putting their fingers in their mouths, it's so gross. I saw a guy picking his nose with his pinky, right? Getting on the people mover. Oh, so gross. And then he wiped it on the friggin' handrail. On the, like, you know, on the little handrail thing that goes with the moving walk thing. So disgusting. And then my kids are, like, you know, sliding their hands on it. And I'm like, oh, come on, dude. That's so gross. Ugh. Anyways, germaphobe I am. But, we had a great time. We met a ton of the characters. It was so fun. We went to Ohana. Met Stitch. Love Stitch. Stitch is awesome. All right. Anyways. I got a ton of stuff. It's like when I go, you know, deep and silent like a submarine for a couple days, I get, like, a bunch of people, like, saying, dude, where are you? What's going on? And I get a bunch of comments and questions and concerns and issues. It's when I bang out a bunch of shows in 1 week, nobody's like, yeah, they're, like, all in, you know, like, in hiding. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm getting my daily dose of the NP dude fed, so they don't need to say anything. Can you guys hear that rattle in my car? I just paid to have this damn thing fixed. Are you kidding me? It's crazy. I just paid a ton of money to get this thing fixed. Oh, well, I'll have to rip off whatever's rattling. But, so I got a bunch of stuff. I got a bunch of stuff. Tons of stuff. Way too much to do in one show, so this will probably fill this week just in, you know, a couple of them that I got. But one of them I wanted to address right away because I thought it was important, and I promised this person, he's kind of a newer chronic intractable. Yes, I worked on the chronic intractable t-shirts, I'm working on it, but the problem is that the place that I did it through online was like $30 a shirt. Nobody's going to pay $30 a shirt, and I can't afford to pay $30 a shirt to give them to you guys. That's just too much. So I got to find a local guy that can do them for like 10 or 15 or something that's reasonable. And my cost will be your cost. I'm not doing this to make money. I'm just doing it to be fun. So, one of my newer chronic intractables came through with some comments and was listening to things. And one of the questions that they had was about the liability of a physician in a collaborative state for that of the NP. And I've kind of touched on this in the past, but it's buried. It's buried. All my stuff now is buried. And I try to tag as much as when you're going through and doing stuff as you go and you tag it, like, oh yeah, this is good enough. It's never good enough. There's never enough tags. People say, where is this? And I got to go look for it. I'm like, I don't know. I gotta go try to find it too. I don't know. I got enough shows out there. It gets buried. But this question was asked before, or it was touched on before, but it was never specifically asked. So I thought it was important because there's a lot of miscommunication, especially in students. Students say, "Oh yeah, you can dump all your liability to the physician, and oh, you don't need to worry about it because you work in a collaborative state. You don't have that liability." And I'm like, "No, that's completely wrong. That's RN thinking." That's the transition of an RN to an APRN. You're getting there. At least you're asking the right question there, chronic intractable. But you're not. You have that liability. It's your license. Your license. Now, if your physician, your collaborative physician, knows nothing of what you do on that specific instance that causes you liability. So say you give somebody with mono amoxicillin, right? And you caused them to have a huge reaction, rash, and you just didn't do a good job, and you blew it, right? So they're suing you. Whatever. Whether you really have liability there or not, I don't know. But let's just say you do. If your physician that's your collaborative was not consulted during that visit, how would they have any liability? They didn't breach a standard of care. Go back to the tort show that I did all about malpractice and insurance and all, you know, what liability is and malpractice means, all that stuff. Type in malpractice in my search bar. I'm pretty sure that one will come up. But the issue is that they don't have any, they have no touch, there's no nexus, there's no connection, and it's not a standard per se for tort, but they don't even know this person exists. How do they know? So that doctor does not enjoy the liability that you do. Now, the second that you go to the physician and say, hey, I got this guy that's got a sore throat, he's got a swollen spleen, and you know, I haven't done any blood work on him, but he just looks really sick, and he's really fatigued, and I think I'm going to give him some amoxicillin. And that physician says, yeah, that's a great plan. And then you go ahead and do it, and you document, you know, consulted physician, and you tied that physician in the chart somehow so that they could prove it. Now you could sue both of you. But you both have that liability. It's joint and several liability, too. We'll get into that someday. We'll do damages one day. That'd be a good topic for a show, wouldn't it? Like how to calculate damages and all the headaches. Ugh, I had a whole class in that. That lady was a ball buster, man. It was a good class, though. It was hard. That was a hard class. You wouldn't think it would be. You just think like, oh, that makes sense. Eh, it doesn't work that way. So, yeah, that one was a good question. And it was just, it reinforces the fact that newer APRNs, you gotta be careful. It's your license. You can't just pass it off onto somebody else. That's the, and that leads me to another one that was out there, right? Where APRNs that want to have the overtime, we've done this show before too, they want overtime, they want all these things, they want all this, you know, exempt or non-exempt status as an employee under Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, and this was a big thread on one of the Facebook pages about, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago, and I'm like, guys, you just don't get it. We're professionals. You meet the professional exemption. Period. Done. It's done. Then they were talking about the over $100,000. Yes, that's one of them as well. But that's, you know, if that's with all your overtime and all your other, you know, calculations and things, then yeah, you're a high wage earner exemption, and there's a different name for it. But that's basically what it comes down to. You're exempt. You guys are professionals. So now that you're a professional, not that you weren't a professional as an RN, you're a professional nurse before. Now you're an advanced practice professional nurse. Welcome to the world of professionals. And I find it so funny that nurses, especially APRNs that are new, have such a hard time understanding this, because when I was an engineer, it was just expected that once you got to a certain level, you got your professional license, you were salaried. So people like balked. They didn't want to get that high because they made more money working low. But that's the first couple years of being an engineer. That's not like, you know, so after 5 years of being an engineer, you're pretty much a professional. You're kind of screwed. You are salaried. And unless your company decides to have a different policy, which is very possible. Now, I had a ton of people email me after that show because I put a couple of my links up there and said, hey, look, you guys can listen to what I'm talking about. It's all in here. And I got a couple people saying, hey, I get overtime, so that must be the law. No, that's your employer saying, hey, we recognize that your time is valuable and we're going to give you a little extra. We don't have to do it, but we choose to do it. Now, if they choose to take that away, then it gets sticky for them. So that's why a lot of employers don't want to do it, because they kind of have to give you some other form of a benefit to replace that one. It's just, it's kind of the practice, and it's a legal, it's not a legal standard per se, but it's kind of the practice that if they decrease your salary, then they'll give you a little more vacation, or they'll give you more CME money, or they'll give you profit sharing plan, which is usually a scam. And so that's out there too. But I get so frustrated when I see people like, oh, I want my overtime, I work 60 hours a week, and I bust my ass. And yeah, it sucks. Get a better contract next time. And that's my response to everybody, is get a better contract. If you work over a certain amount of hours or see a number of patients, which is basically what it comes down to, then you want to get paid more. So you should get more benefit from that. If they're pounding you with patients in your practice, you should be compensated for it, period. So if you're making 80 grand a year and you're seeing 40 people a day, you're making them a crap ton of money. I don't care what practice you're in. You're making them $350,000, $400,000 a year. Gross. In. Now you got expenses and other stuff that's tied to you. It's not just 85 grand, but you know, add 50% to your cost, and that's basically what it is. Plus an MA for you that they otherwise wouldn't necessarily need to pay, and you know, so I mean, there's some other benefits you need to think about. But in reality, it's a ton of money you're making for these people. And I'm kind of all over the place, and I apologize because I've got a list in my brain of about six things, and I'm kind of bouncing around between all of them. But keep in mind, you're a professional. Exemption applies for Fair Labor Standards Act, and for your local, your state wage and hour kicks in as well, where you're now an exempt employee, and you don't get to get overtime unless your company applies it on their willingness to do it. It's all up to them if they want to do it or not. Or you get a better deal. That's my response. Get a better contract. I had somebody ask me. This was kind of an awkward exchange, and I don't mean it to be awkward. So if you're listening out there, and you very well may be, it's not that you were awkward. It was just I've never been asked this before. I was asked to help somebody get a job, like help me, you know, interviewing skills and all that stuff. And I just don't know how to make that happen. And to be honest with you, I don't have time. It would be so expensive for you that you could find another service that would be more local to you that could help you with interviewing skills and things like that. There's got to be 100 of them on the internet. Somebody, if you've ever used any of those type of services, let me know. Email me, jeff@thenpdude.com. I want to hear about them because I would gladly let other people know about them. I'm not the right guy for that. I think I could help individuals that are close to me. You know, if you want to come over and have a beer, then fine. I'll sit down and have a beer with you and talk about how to get a job. I've done that with a bunch of people, and they've been fairly successful. So I think I can do the work of that. It's just I don't know how to charge for it. I just don't know how much time it's going to take. And to be perfectly honest, the individual that was asking, and that, don't take this the wrong way, the skills that you're trying to learn are not interviewing skills. They're skills that you need to know or have prior to even NP school. You just got to learn it. You got to learn. It was, and I'm not going to divulge too much, but it was language issue. It's language barrier. And you really just got to get into it. You got to expose yourself more and more to it. You got to get more and more into volunteer somewhere and where you have to communicate a lot, whatever it is. But you need to learn those skills. I can't help you learn to communicate better for a language barrier. You need an English coach. I just don't know how else to handle that. And it's too much. It would take me 6 months. It would be really expensive for you. I can't afford that. You can't afford that. It's not a quick, easy fix for that. But, I mean, if somebody has a question like, hey, should I do this or should I do that? Somebody asked me, here's a good question, too. Should I do thank you notes? Yes, do thank you notes. Absolutely. Handwritten if possible. If not, then you print them out on a nice fine linen paper. Fine linen paper. Always fine linen paper. And you send a nice, well-worded. See, my handwriting sucks. So I always type mine up. It just looks nicer for me. But if you got nice handwriting, a nice handwritten note goes a long way, because most people in the digital age, especially younger people, do not do that. It's a kind of a lost art, you know, doing a nice handwritten letter. I wish I could. I'm just not good at handwriting. I'm more of a I'll type it out. Do the best I can with that, I guess. Emails are not good. Don't do an email. A piece of mail in the mail that comes in, because most people don't get a lot of personal mail at their work, especially now in this day and age. It's usually junk mail or subpoenas. Not me, I'm just saying in general. Send a letter. Nice thank you note. Thank them for it, and then ask for the job. If you want the job, you have to ask for it. People don't ask for jobs, too. That's weird, right? Ask for the job. You gotta ask for it. Because if I get two people, and one says, you know, I really like your company here, and they don't ask for the job, like the other person says, I really like your company, I really want to work here, can I have this job? Which one are you going to hire? The person that asked for it, right? Just makes sense. Okay, I had another question that came through, a chronic intractable, that, a newer one, that said, we're trying to debate on, or it was a question about a restrictive covenant, and somebody asked me about restrictive covenants. They were searching my website. I don't use the word restrictive covenant very much. It is a restrictive covenant, but technically all clauses of a contract are restrictive covenants, right? They're all limiting you or forcing you to do something, right? If it's in the negative, it's usually considered a restrictive covenant, like you can't do something. But it can be a bunch of different things. So I don't really like the word restrictive covenant. I like non-competes or non-solicitation agreements. It's more specific. So that's usually what you'll see. So if you're searching my website and you want to talk about non-competes, it's N-O-N hyphen compete, non-compete with a hyphen, right? So there's your non-compete or non-competition or anything like that should get you there. But this one was, and I know I've talked about it, but it's buried. I know it's buried. So I'm going to regroup for you, specifically for you, chronic intractable that's out there, newer one. With a non-compete, if your contract ends, does the non-compete go away? And they were debating this. I think this person is in school. And I can't remember. I'm not going to look it up right now. I'm driving. But they're in school. So I think they were like debating with other people, whether it was like an online post or something that they were talking, or whether they were just sitting around drinking coffee talking. And they were debating on whether a non-compete goes away when the contract term is up. It doesn't matter. It depends, right? That's my general answer. But it depends on what the words in the contract are. If the contract says, you know, upon termination of this agreement, by any cause or any means, you know, for a period of 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, God forbid you if you sign that one, my view on non-competes, go back and listen. I've got different views, different times, depending on what we're talking about. But it basically says, you know, you've got this limitation after the contract term. Does it still enforceable? Yeah, of course it's enforceable. Because the contract says for a period after the termination of the contract. It's completely in there. So that, by definition, says that it always lasts after the termination. Now, you can have a no moonlighting clause, which is during. We've talked about that too. So search moonlighting. Talked about that extensively. And you can find a moonlighting provision that's in there as well. Or a non-solicitation, which is you're not going to steal clients or potentially employees. You know, you don't want to steal staff. Like your MA is awesome and you want them to go. You guys work great as a team and you're going somewhere else and you want to bring them with you. You can't solicit them under certain contracts. So that's pretty simple of an answer. It is what the contract says, right? So you have to just read your contract. But by definition, a non-compete is always after. You know, unless you're doing a moonlighting, then that's during. So I think it's pretty much already answered. But the question then becomes, what's your status after your contract ends? That was kind of part of the other question. That was my answer, main answer back to this person was, well, if your contract ends, your term ends, and you don't renew the contract, and there's not a provision in the contract that says that there's an automatic renewal, which I will never do an automatic renewal. I don't like them. I don't like them, I don't like them, I don't like them. Because you get busy, and then you can't get them to work on it, and you try to get this other people that are, you know, the owners or the people that write the contract on the employer's side. They can't come to terms with what they want. Next thing you know, you're expired, now you have an automatic renewal, and it's not your fault. Now you're screwed. You're stuck in a new contract. And it wasn't your fault. I don't like them. It's too easy for the other side to just drag their feet and then it just automatically renews. That's why I don't like them. And I don't trust people with that stuff. This is my control. We'll do it for a year or two and that's my deal. And then when we're done, we're going to renegotiate. We'll renegotiate everything. I'll be smarter then. Oops, sorry. That was me honking at people on accident. Whoops. Sorry. So the automatic renewal thing is kind of a weirdo exception to that. But if you are in a contract, it ends, the term ends, and you're sitting there and you're like, I don't know what the hell I am now. Do we just kind of renew? Do we work under the old contract and just call it part of that? Or, well, you're an at-will employee with terms that are based upon the previous contract is really what you are. So you can give, you know, a day notice and legally walk out the door. You don't need to give a notice at that point because you're no longer under the binding contract. You can do all the things that you want to do. Now, you have to be careful with the things that happen after, like the non-solicitation, the non-compete, all that stuff, because those may apply still, right? Because if your contract ends, even if you're still working there, your contract ended. It's just a document with a time frame. Draw a timeline. When does the timeline start? When does the timeline stop? When does all your quote-unquote restrictive covenants end? Put a mark there. And then you're just cruising along on life along this timeline. That's all it is. So it's not a big deal, but the problem is that I would be very leery of a clause in a contract that has an automatic renewal. That was the part that I was looking through, and I was like, yeah, I probably should talk about that. Because automatic renewals, to me, they just scare me. People that are just either, and not even being dishonest, they're busy. So I'm trying to grab the right people at the right time to get your lowly little contract renewed is a crock of crap. It's just not going to happen. You got to start 6 months ahead of time beating these people over the head saying, hey, don't forget, in 6 months we got to renew my contract. We got to start talking about this. What's the terms? And they won't do anything with it until you threaten to leave. They're going to keep it exactly the same. So it's just effectively going to be an automatic renewal anyways, right? Unless you force it otherwise. So 6 months before your contract's up, just start sending out resumes just to get some feelers. If you really like where you are, you say, hey, look, I got a job offer over here. It's making 20% more. Let's make that happen. But you also have to know your worth. You know, if you're only seeing 10 patients a day and you want to make 150 grand a year, you're full crap. You're not going to get there. So it's not going to happen, even though you're bringing in more than that. It's just your cost isn't there, or your cost benefit isn't in your favor. So another one from same chronic intractable went through, so was listening to a couple of my episodes, came back and said, he goes, dude, I want you to not say doctor when you're talking about physicians, because there's those of us out there, and I'm not one of them, just to let you know, in all candid honesty, I'm not a doctor, a DNP, doctor nurse practitioner, I'm an MSN. The question came up about, you know, the doctor being called a doctor, and we've earned the right to be called a doctor. We should be called a doctor too, and they shouldn't be called just a doctor because it insinuates that it's a physician. And you know, and I get that fight, man. I really do. I understand the fight, but I think it's the wrong fight. We're fighting the wrong fight when we sit here and talk about we want to be called a doctor too. And I'm trying to use that voice to be a little sarcastic, right? Because I'm trying to put across the point that people on the outside of the nurse practitioner world looking in, okay? I'm kind of an outsider. I got all these weird backgrounds. So I look at this fight from the outside and say, who the hell gives a crap what you're called? Do your job, right? Educate the people on what we do. They will follow us. They like us. They want us. They need us. Don't worry about the name. We're not doctors in the term of physician. You can have a doctorate, but you're not a physician. So why would you want to even try to remotely use that title to get possible confusion? And I've talked about that in the past, that if somebody's holding themselves out to be a doctor, like a physician doctor, I think it's a crock of crap. You shouldn't do that. You should get nailed for holding yourself out to be a physician. That's against the rules. You can't do that. Do I care? Look, I got a doctorate. I have a doctorate. I have a Juris Doctorate. Have I ever been called Dr. Jeff, except by accident, by patients thinking I was a physician? No. Do I care? No. And every time I get called doctor, I say, nope, I'm a nurse, and I move on. I don't even educate with that anymore because I don't have time for it. If I have time, I talked about it. I explain the difference. When I have new patients, I explain the difference. Just so they know. So that they can make an educated choice. Do they really want to be in this practice? I think that's a smart thing to do. New patient comes in. I say, hey, my name's Jeff. I'm an advanced practice registered nurse. I'm a nurse practitioner. I'm not a physician. Now, I do try to say physician, and I do use the word provider instead of doctor's office. I say our provider's office, things like that, because I don't want people to think that I'm holding us out to be doctors, physicians, right? And the modicum in my history is that a doctor, quote unquote, is the physician. It's just the word. So do I get freaked out about the DNPs saying I want to be called a doctor? I really don't care. But I think when you argue about it, it makes us look so petty. That's their world. That's their name. Why are we fighting it? Go the other way. Say, no, we're nurses. Move on. Educate your patients to what we do, and you'll be better off. I went back and forth, and then we understand, we agree to disagree on it. But I honestly think that if your fight is to be called doctor when you're a DNP, You're missing the fight. You're not. They want you to fight that fight because they don't care. It's a nonsensical fight to them. They don't care what you're called. The doctors could care less if you're called a doctor, a nurse practitioner, a nurse practitioner. They could care less. What they care about is that you're taking money out of their pocket. That's their fear or their concern. I saw another one about, it was on Kevin MD, right? This Kevin MD guy that's out there every now and then, he'll have an article and it just flares everybody up like a giant, you know, giant rash, all itchy and red and inflamed. But it was kind of the same concept, but, you know, I wear my lab coat. I've got a white, and everybody now has a white lab coat. It wasn't Kevin MD that wrote it, it was some lady, but the point is the same. He published it on his website. I have a long white lab coat. Who gives a crap if you have a lab coat? So stupid. Oh, I earned that lab coat. It means something to me. I could care less. It doesn't mean crap to me. So if I want to go buy 10 lab coats and wear them every day, I'll wear two on top of each other. I could care less. It's a freaking lab coat. Who cares? It's stupid. It's a stupid fight. They want to get you fired up over lab coats. Because if we're worried about lab coats, we're not worried about collaborative, getting rid of the collaborative agreements. Right? If we're worried about being called doctor, we're not fighting the fight that we need to get rid of the collaborative agreements. So they're going to come up with stupid things for us to be whiny and complain about. And yes, it's whiny. It sounds so whiny from the outside looking in. Because the public doesn't care what we're called. And you want to just, you're worried about a name, a title? Who cares? Yes, you earned your doctorate. And that's very difficult to do. And that should be recognized. You get to put DNP after your name. I do not. Congratulations. But to call yourself out as a doctor, it's not worth the fight. It's just not. Fight something else. Spend your energy somewhere else. Teaching patients. Educating the public. I use it all the time. I've talked to people in the grocery store line. Wearing scrubs or whatever. Hey, what do you do? You a doctor? No, I'm a nurse practitioner. Oh, what's that? Boom. Go right into my 30-second elevator speech. Done. And I've done that elevator speech on here. And it's just kind of from the cuff. Same thing. Over and over again. Educate the public. Get rid of the arguments of just wasted energy. You're never going to win that one anyways. You're not going to win that one anyways. I don't understand. And I'm going to get hate mail. I don't care. Send me the hate mail. I can handle it. Broad shoulders. I'll take it. And I'll even read. If you convince me otherwise, I will retract this entire section of this podcast and redo it. I promise. I won't redo it, but I'll do a new one. I'm not going to delete or edit it, any of my podcasts. The whole idea behind this podcast is that it's just from the cuff. It's just me talking. That's what it is. All right, guys. So we're at like 28 minutes. I don't even know how to title this show because I'm all over the friggin' place, right? That's what happens when you take some time off, your brain resets. I don't know. So we're going to work on the Chronic Intractable t-shirts. I got a good design. I think it looks good. My kids like it. So that's like my guidepost. If my kids think it's cool, then I'm good. Because we have the same mentality. We have the mentality of a 10-year-old. So you guys can always email me, jeff@thenpdude.com. You can catch me on Facebook, @thenpdude, if you want to tag me. Sometimes it lets me know you do it. Sometimes it doesn't. I don't know why. You can Instagram me. I don't know. Somebody made a comment to me about Instagram, joking around, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't know. If I figure it out, I'll let you guys know. The other thing out there is iTunes. I've got a decent number of iTunes listeners. Come and give me an iTunes rating. Shoot me an iTunes rating. You guys can always give me a Facebook rating. Ratings are the best way. If you want to support the show, there's two good ways to do it. Well, you can like and share the show. That's always gets more people out there, you know, recognizing that this is a podcast and that I'm out here talking. But if you share the show, it doubles my viewing right off my hits on my website, right off the bat. Just if a couple of people share the show. That's an amazing way of doing it. But the really good way to do it is do a rating. Because when you Google the NP Dude, the Facebook page is like the first thing that comes up, and it gives the rating right there. It tells you how many people and what the stars are. So it's kind of like gives some credibility. So if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, that's a great way of doing it. The iTunes is another way that people can actually, you know, the more people that rate me on iTunes, the higher up in the iTunes store like rating system, they don't tell you where you fall until you get to the like top 20. You just show up on their main page as one of the main ones. I don't ever have visions of being in the top 20. I just don't. This ain't that good. I'm a 3 at best. So, but if you're going to give me a 2 or a 3 or 4, just tell me why. You know, 4 is a good number. I'm good with it. But, you know, I'm going to see a lot of 5s. People tell me how they like what they hear. The other thing you could do, and I'm trying to save this to the end because I'm not trying to be obnoxious about it, but if you want to support this show financially, you can do your shopping through my Amazon affiliate link. It doesn't cost you anything more, but it does kick me back a small percentage of whatever it is that you buy. What you do is you go onto my website, thenpdude.com. You scroll down if you're on your mobile device. At the bottom, there's a little Amazon clicky box thing. Click on it. It takes you to Amazon. Type in the search for whatever it is you're going to buy. Buy it. I get a small percent. If you're on my main webpage, the full page, if you go to the right, you'll see the same bar, the same box. It's right there. Just click on it. Takes you to Amazon. Do your shopping you otherwise would have, and it kicks me a small percent. It's great. I love it. And I'm not making a ton of money doing it. I've got a couple bucks in there. You know, like 30 bucks or something in the last month. But that's going to help me pay for web hosting. And so if you guys want to keep this thing going, if you want to help share the show and spread the word, that's great too. But don't forget to try the Amazon affiliate link. I got, let's see, what was the weird thing I got? There was a weird... It was the weirdest thing I've seen. I don't know. It's just people buy weird stuff. It's just all random. Like I got somebody. The last thing I think was purchased was some face wash. Somebody got some weird face wash stuff. I don't know. I'm not a female. I don't do that stuff. But cool. By the way, I appreciate it. You want to buy a TV? Awesome. It's a big dollar item. It's buy you do your Christmas shopping. You can start Christmas shopping. It's about middle of August. So have fun. Christmas is going to be here before you know it. Start using my Amazon affiliate link. All right, guys, I appreciate you guys sharing the show. I appreciate all the kind words. Keep up the good work out there, spreading the word, and we'll talk soon.